The Real Estate Talk Podcast, Season 2, with Robert Keilman and Joshua Britt.
That's correct.
Featuring topics about real estate nobody is talking about.
We need your expertise on it.
The Real Estate Talk Podcast starts now.
Right, Real Estate Talk Podcast, Season 2, Episode 10. It's about time for a market update. Some crazy things going on in real estate. Stay with us
on our 100th video upload.
Yep. Oh, man, there's a lot going on in real estate. We got a lot to get through for this market update. This is our 100th video upload, and we got a lot of details to get through. We got Federal Chairman Jerome Powell addressing Congress, market updates for the spring, you know, supply, demand, and what AI thinks will happen. The National Association of Realtors, I guess they're out of money.
Yeah.
Zillow jumping on the lawsuit bandwagon and more. Stay tuned as we get into this. Well, let's go ahead and start off first with the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell addressing Congress. So Fed Chairman Jerome Powell addressed Congress and Senate saying that he won't rush interest rate cuts as he is not assured inflation will reach its target by 2%, but he expects some cuts to come at some point this year. We're going to go ahead and comment on that. Let's put 5 minutes on the clock and go.
Yeah, I think this basically goes back to where we were probably about 3-4 months ago. We talked about interest rates and cuts and everything. And, you know, at the time, I thought that we would probably end the year at 6.25%. I know you had a lower expectation.
Like 5.75. Yeah,
you and our guest at the time, Sherry Reed. But I kind of, it makes perfect sense to me, especially when you go back to the early days of COVID. The thing that was really driving a lot of the inflation was housing, real estate. People were buying houses left and right.
Yeah, I'm bidding it up, but there was lack of supply, though.
There was a lack of supply, but it also caused materials to go up as well. Remember when wood prices were
sky
high?
2x4s went over $8 a pop.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be like $375, $4.
Yeah, because everybody was home and they was doing those honey-do lists that, you know, had just been piling up for years. And it was like, so, hey, I don't got to go to work. So I'm going to just fix up the things around my house. Plus, you had the builders were doing new construction. They needed wood. You had your investors that flip houses. They needed wood. So it was like that was one of the things, the catalyst that kind of sparked the inflation. And the next thing you know, food went haywire. Eggs went crazy. And, you know, so I think that it would be a grave mistake for him or the Federal Reserve, period, to cut interest rates before the real estate home buying season is done in the spring and summer. I think that you got to be targeting a fall time frame, the third quarter. And, you know, even if they hold the three cuts that they initially said back on December 22nd that they were going to make, you could see a cut in October, November, December. And I think that's the best time to make cuts because it'll be going into the fall, winter time frame when home buying typically slows down.
Yeah, it slows down. But also, on the other hand, we have a presidential election coming up. I hate to say anything is politically motivated, but that makes the best sense right before the November election. Like, hey, look, interest rates are down. We're doing great things with our economy. You know, gives them more to grandstand, I think, anyway. So I guess we'll see what happens with that. But these interest rates are just crushing people's souls, though.
Yeah, but they're not as bad as they were. Like, there was a point in October last year.
Oh, and it got up to 8%.
It was over 8%. Yeah. And so, you know, my loan officer today, my great loan officer, I'll give her a shout out here, Sherry Reed, she locked in one of my clients at 6.25% today.
That's still too high. It needs to be in the fives.
Yeah, it would be nice to have it in the fives, but it's way better than the eight.
Yeah, it's better than the eights, but it's not like home prices are going down with interest rates.
That's true, but buying power goes up with interest rates going down.
Yeah, and if we don't get more supply, then we are going to have issues, as we will talk about more as we get into it. We're going to go ahead and end this segment right now, and we're going to go ahead and go on to the next one.
Absolutely.
So, all done. So let's talk about mortgage demand, okay? Mortgage demand picks up ahead of the spring buying season.
Mm-hmm.
So mortgage applications increased 9.7% on a seasonally adjusted basis on the week ending March 1st, according to the Mortgage Bankers Association. First week of higher demand in nearly 3 weeks. So interesting. Let's go ahead and...
Yeah, so it's not... If you follow interest rates very closely, at the end of January, you could have got right around a 6% interest rate. Like, if you hit it, just timed it perfectly, there was maybe a period of about 24 hours where you could have got a 5.99% interest rate. And then the January jobs report came out smoking hot the first Friday in February, and that sent interest rates soaring back over 7% for the remainder of the month of February. So now with interest rates starting to come down some, we have another jobs report due out tomorrow morning.
It's supposed to come in a bit lower.
Yeah, that's what everybody's expecting. But if that thing comes in smoking hot tomorrow, you can expect to see interest rates creep back over 7% in the short term.
I don't know what I think about the jobs report. I'll just leave that alone, because somehow it doesn't make sense to me when I'm seeing tech sector lay off and I'm seeing other sectors laying off people. So I'm like, okay, where are we? What sector's left for these jobs that are coming out of nowhere?
Yeah, but I think really what's happening is they may be getting laid off in with one company that's laying people off, but they're just ready. They're able to go to somewhere else and fill another job, because the number of jobless claims has not increased week over week. And those numbers are tracked on a weekly basis. So therefore, we should probably see a jobs report tomorrow that is uneventful for the most part. It's going to probably come right in line with what all the expectations are. The thing that you want to watch, though, is the wages. For January, it was up 0.06%, and they really want to see somewhere right around a 0.02%. If wages are up, that means more money is going into the consumer's hands, which then could drive up the price of normal everyday things.
I'm curious if these, like so many jobs are added to the economy or so many jobs unfilled in these reports, I imagine. What if a lot of people are entrepreneurs? Is that even going to correlate? Because you got a lot of people doing Lyft and they, you know, doing little side businesses for themselves that they made it full time, selling, be a retailer on Amazon.
Well, I think that's the reason why, for the most part, everyone for the longest time was trying to figure out why there were so many jobs that were vacant.
And just going into it for themselves.
Everyone was going into being in business for themselves. They had their hustle. And, you know, if you remember back in 21, maybe even 22, you know, the common thing on all the social platforms is like, what's your side hustle? You know, yeah. what you grinding? What you doing? You know, the other thing that you're doing? Job number two, right? So I think
job number two became job number one.
That's right. For a lot of people, it did. And there are a lot of people who are now their own boss and they're working for themselves. You know, and that's great for those people who want that. But I think that's the reason why there were so many vacancies and you had a large number of vacancies. And even right now, when a company lays off, there are jobs that people can go fill.
Yeah. Let's get into the next segment, because I know we talked a little bit about the mortgage applications being up. Yep. So the appetite for debt is there. So let's go on to the next segment and talk about the supply. Get a second air horn there. So U.S. housing market short 7.2 million homes, according to Realtor.com. You know, depends on where you go to get this information. The amount of homes short in the U.S. seems to increase and decrease depending upon what source. I've seen it much higher. But U.S. Housing market is short 7.2 million homes, according to Realtor.com's latest housing market analysis. Nearly 18 million households have been formed over the past decade. However, only 10 million single-family homes were constructed during the same time period. It could take until 2029 for builders to close that gap. Now, we've already talked and had a conversation with builders about the supply, so let's go ahead and put 5 minutes on the clock and get right into it and go.
Yeah, I think the reason why the numbers vary dependent upon who you speak to is it's based also on how much research, time, and energy you put into the report. This report here is essentially saying, hey, there's been this many new households created, but there's only been this many new houses that have been built. Well, new construction doesn't make up the totality of the entire housing market, right? Mm-hmm. There are people who, you know, pass on and they, you know, the family sells the home through an estate sale or whatnot. So that's not calculated in here either. But I've seen a lot of numbers as low as about 6 million. I think the highest I've seen was right around 8.3 million. Mm. But I think the true number is somewhere in the middle ground of 7. But here's the other thing that speaks to the supply. So just right here in our own market, I went back and I just pulled the data for the last 7 days.
Yeah.
And right here in our own market, we had 597 homes that were listed for sale.
Yeah.
That's new homes to the market.
Last 7 days or is
last
this...
7 days.
Okay.
It's the last 7 days. So not a weekly thing like ending Friday or Saturday of a week. It's the last 7 days. It's a rolling
calendar
days.
Or calendar days.
Yes. Yeah. And so there were 597 homes that were listed for sale, but 675 sold. So you have more
getting sold
than getting sold than being listed. And this is where the inventory problem is exacerbated because the differential is a negative.
Yeah.
So even when we get a rush of houses on the market, those houses go under contract and sell quickly. But then the other thing that you look at is there were how many that went pending in the last 7 days, meaning they've gone through home inspections and contingencies. They are pending and setting up to close maybe within the next week or two, and that number is 614.
So this is the Southeast Virginia market.
Yes.
But is the same can be said about Texas, Austin markets and stuff like that, Houston markets. Do you know have you heard anything about them? I actually didn't read about it. Should have.
No. So, I mean, when we talked about Texas and Florida.
Yeah.
2 weeks ago, I think it was, during the insurance one, Texas and Florida is an anomaly situation going on right there. There's people moving out of Florida because they can't get homeowners insurance.
Oh,
trying to buy houses in Florida can't get insured to buy a home in Florida.
Yeah,
so
because of all the weather.
Exactly, the disasters. So I've actually been speaking more to people when they look along the East Coast and they say, okay, I still want to be in a beach environment, a warm beach environment, and you look up the coast, you got Myrtle Beach, and you got the Outer Banks in North Carolina, and then you got Virginia Beach.
Us, yeah.
And so when people look, you know, Virginia Beach is more attractive for a lot of people. Now, I'm sure Myrtle Beach area is probably getting somewhat of a spike in people moving there as well as the Outer Banks. So I think that there are a lot of markets that are still doing well, but there's always going to be markets that aren't doing well.
You know? I mean, not everywhere is everybody wants to live, you know, I get it.
And I mean, we were even shocked earlier this year where Zillow said that Buffalo, New York was going to be the best real estate market in 2024. Can't wait to see what the end result of that is, but you know, it's a possibility.
Yeah. Zillow's got their own problems right now about what's going on.
Oh, yeah. And I think we get into that a little bit later.
Yeah, a little bit, you know. But we'll save it for a whole new podcast. We'll just completely slam Zillow all over the place, in our opinions, rather. Anyway, we got 30 seconds remaining. Yeah. We'll go ahead and end this here. All right. So we talked about that mortgage applications were up. We got supply is short. So the way housing works, everybody, supply and demand, right? That equals your home prices. So U.S. home market, excuse me, U.S. housing market posted record-setting value growth in 2023. I don't think that was any surprise with all the home prices. Despite slowing sales, the value of the U.S. housing market experienced record-breaking growth in 2023. According to Redfin's latest housing report, the total value the total value of 90 million U.S. homes rose from $45.1 trillion in December 2022 to $47.5 trillion in December 2023, a 5.3% annual difference. The average U.S. homes value jumped 4.30% year over year to $495,183 in December. That's below the second and third quarters of 2022 and 2023, when the average home value surpassed $500,000, meaning homes purchased during either of those quarters have depreciated. There was a little bit of a drop of the average price nationwide, but we'll see how the spring market with that we just talked about, the supply and demand. We could probably see it surpassing the average rate of 500,000 this year.
Yeah, but see, I think that these numbers, because they are focusing on the entire housing market, it's going to be different in every market that you're in. You know, if you're in Texas somewhere, if you're in Florida, you're in Virginia, you're in California, it's going to be different in each market. And you know, they said the average value jumped 4.3%, but here in our area, it was over 9%.
Yeah,
value increase. Area
dependent.
So the average was 4.3, but in some areas they had higher value growth. So it is going to be different, and there are some of the areas, some of the cities in where we're at, that are well over $500,000 for the median home sales.
Yeah.
So you know, each market's different. Each market's a bit more unique. I would say that if you are going to be shopping for a home, it's no longer going to be about the location. It's going to be more about the price.
Right, yep. And actually, we'll go ahead, and that's the next segment. We'll go ahead and kill this one here.
Yeah.
But, yeah, price, not location, the most important. You know, the first rule of real estate: location, 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 but now it seems to be price, price, price. Recent survey conducted by Coldwell Banker, 56% of the respondents said price was the most important factor for respondents when buying a home. Well, you know what? I kind of want to unpack that just a little bit, even though that was just a very brief statement. But let's think about this. If locations such as like near water, great schools, mm-hmm. you know, close to shopping, restaurants, you know, all that stuff, that was used to be the quintessential most important part for most buyers, but now they're looking at price. So, you know what? Maybe there's other location, not so good as schools that you wanted so much, looks a little bit better just because of the price. I think what we're going to end up seeing is a lot more gentrification happening to neighborhoods, which is going to really affect those with low income pretty bad, I think, possibly.
Potentially. There is some potential there. It's just that there has to be some other catastrophic catalyst that brings home values down. That's the reason why real estate is one of the best investments that anyone can do. And, you know, I remember a book that I read once, Everyday Millionaires.
Yeah.
And it would talk about how people who worked 9-to-5 jobs, they were, you know, millionaires, but they were mostly millionaires because of the equity they had built up in their homes. And we've mentioned here on the show several times, like 60% of all the houses in the United States are owned free and clear, no mortgage on them. So for those people who own those houses free and clear,
would you consider those assets?
They are.
You know what's funny? You got people like, is it Grant Cardone yeah. and Robert Kiyosaki saying the home you live in is not an asset, it's a liability, because it doesn't make you any money. It just costs you money.
Well, for...
I'm tired of seeing those stupid posts on social media on that and everything. I was like, in what way? If you were renting a stupid apartment. It's not making you any money either.
Yeah, yeah. It's somewhat of an oxymoron statement.
But those guys have primarily rentals.
Exactly.
So they're going to be pushing rentals hard.
Yeah, yeah. They want you. They
to
want
rent
this to
their
be
shit.
A,
that's
a,
why.
A nation of renters.
Yeah,
because they're so heavily invested.
They're institutional
invested.
Buyers. Yeah, they are essentially institutional buyers.
They are so heavily invested in multifamily and rental properties, apartment complexes, that they need people to be renters.
Yeah,
but at the rate at which homes are or the price of homes are going, you know, there's a possibility that people won't be able to buy a home and it will be forced to rent.
Yeah.
And until some big catalyst happens that forces people to start selling homes a lot, this is, could stay like this for a while.
Yeah, well, it will, because we're going back to the, you know, the supply and demand topic, but we have the United States and I'm gonna get stupid political on this, but it doesn't matter what the politics are at the border. We got a lot of people coming in.
Yes.
They got to have a place to live. Where are they going to live?
Yeah.
Okay. It's going to have to be either rentals, either the government's paying for it, somebody's paying for it, they're paying for it themselves, whatever. It's, we already had a low housing supply before the border crisis that's happening right now that you hear a lot in the news. So I wonder what that's going to do long term to the housing market as well. Is that going to have a significant impact?
100% it will.
Because we can't build houses fast enough, and we can't build them affordable.
It has no,
so affordable homes are going to run out, like big time.
They're not even here anymore. Like you find affordable homes like sparingly,
yeah.
And it's usually the ones that need updates, need repairs,
desperate repairs.
Yes.
We're not talking like little things here.
Yes. So, but with more people coming in and not being able to build houses fast enough, the people coming here need somewhere to live.
Yeah.
And so they're going to find somewhere to live. It might be, you know, multifamily, multi-generational in one house.
Yeah.
But they're going to figure it out. And, you know, it's definitely a political hot button topic that we just, it's not what we want to talk about.
No, I mean, it's not what we want to talk about, but they need some place to live. It's real estate.
Yeah.
I don't want to touch on politics too much, but it's really going to be an issue.
It is.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Anyway, speaking of issues, we'll go ahead and end this segment here. National Association of Realtors. Let's talk about them, because I personally despise that organization. I think it's a racket. That's my opinion. I will go ahead and digress. But National Association of Realtors, brokerages and MLSs are now on their own. Dog-eat-dog world now. NAR, commission suit insurance coverage, ran out some time ago. The National Association of Realtors hit its maximum insurance coverage limit of $1 million for claims related to the antitrust commission suits some time ago. The trade group told its local and state association executives in an email. This means there are no funds under NAR's policy available to pay for the cost of defending the dozens of realtor associations or multiple listing services who have been sued in such suits nationwide. So we know about the National Association of Realtors, the commission lawsuit, Department of Justice bringing it down their neck to decouple commissions, and MLSs might be getting sued now, and other brokerages are getting sued. So they're ran out of their lawsuit insurance money, and they're basically like, hey, I know for decades you guys have been paying us dues religiously, and when it's our time to come and serve you, you know, we don't have that much money anymore, you know, sorry guys. Mm-hmm. Thanks for paying. What have they been doing all this money lately? I'm going out to a lot of lunches, paying off politicians. What have they been doing?
Yeah. But we already talked about this. we knew this was going to happen. We looked into it back in November when the lawsuit was filed. We seen they had $3.3 billion worth of assets on hand. And I think even last week we touched on it, where we could literally see a scenario where the NAR and the MLSs become insolvent.
Yeah, I really think National Association of Realtors will become insolvent because I think the last time what we were reading about the total assets of NAR, somewhere around $1 billion in assets.
3.3.
3.3 yeah, billion?
Yeah, 3.3 billion.
I mean, they're at 1.8 billion in the current ruling, but it can go as high as 5 billion when everything's all said and done. That's why a lot of those real estate companies, brokerages, bent the knee and just decided to settle. I think, you know, Keller Williams, you know, we talked about this last podcast. And
yeah.
Berkshire is still in the fight, I guess, last I checked.
Yeah, they got dragged in even deeper now. So now they're actually going after Warren Buffett as well.
He's got deep pockets.
Yeah, because, you know, they say that, you know, in this whole thing that they basically used his name in the propaganda, if you will, for listing their homes with Berkshire Homes services. So they're now dragging him in because his name was mentioned frequently to people who listed their homes with Berkshire Home Services. So Berkshire Hathaway Home Services. So yeah, he's getting drug into it, and you know, there's really no stop to where this can go.
I know, it's a bottomless pit.
Somebody's going to have to draw a line in the sand and say, look, this is it. Like, this horse is beat.
No. This is going to be going on for years.
Yeah. But at some point, though, you have to stop it because then you could take literally every player in the industry out.
No, because you have a lawsuit that sets a precedent. I'm not a lawyer, but I'm just kind of assuming how this works, right? For example, the Sitzer Burnett versus NAR, you know, that precedence has been established.
Yeah.
So now they all have to do, even if it's similar, a lawsuit that's similar to that, that's already a precedent. All that lawyer really has to do is argue on whatever point he's arguing on, whatever that is being sued for, and that sets a new precedent. And then the other one sets a new precedent and a new precedent and a new precedent. This is a wheel.
Yeah, but what
it's not going to stop.
Yeah, it has to because
what did I say last one? 45 trillion
once the NAR is bled dry and they're defunct, insolvent, then they can't be sued anymore because there's nothing left to them, right? And then if you go after the MLSs and you sue them and they're sued to their maximum amount, then they're insolvent. They can't pay anymore. So you can literally take everybody out in the whole industry.
Well, they'll start off from the top and work their way down probably. So you start off with all the NAR.
Yeah.
Then you work your way down to the brokerages, the big brokerages, and then you go to the little brokerages.
The MLSs too.
The MLSs. Yeah. And then.
But once you squeeze them all out the industry, there's nobody left. There's nobody left.
Oh.
At some point, it has to stop.
All the insurance companies that do errors and omissions will be insolvent.
It has to stop at some point. It's going to have to stop. Listen, you're going to take out way too many people. You're going to take out way too many people.
You're going to tell attorneys, you know, to have a heart and put brakes on it at some point. They're not going to.
Yeah, they're not going to. But eventually, the money is gone. You can't get money from nothing. So
yeah, you do. You start seizing personal assets. They might even go to the agents.
But look, if they go to the National Association of Realtors, probably the biggest person that they could tackle, and they bleed them dry, they're done, right? So now, does it make it worth it for the attorneys to even argue? Because as we said, they get 33% to 40% of the personal in every lawsuit. So at that point, if they're coming after smaller brokerages, is it even worth it for them to even fight that battle?
Maybe not the big time firms, but the little firms, sure.
They don't have much money. What are you going to get from them?
It doesn't matter if it's $1,000.
No, it will matter because you can't get a whole group of people around to try to get $1,000 in a class action lawsuit that the attorneys are going to take 40% of it.
I don't know, man. I'm just assuming it's not going to stop because why would you?
Oh, it's going to stop at some point because it's not going to be worth it anymore.
Yeah.
The attorneys got their big purse. They got their $400 million.
Yeah, but the little attorneys didn't get their purse.
Yeah, that's fine. But eventually, once the money is gone from the big players, it doesn't make it doesn't make sense to argue it to get a smaller amounts of money.
We're way past time, but so yeah. We're going to go ahead and end this right here. Zillow, we're just talking about Zillow. So they jumped on the lawsuit bandwagon as well.
Yeah.
So, MLS has pushed to dismiss antitrust charges from Zillow and ShowingTime. So two multiple listing services, the MLS, accused Zillow of violating, two multiple listing services accused by Zillow of violating antitrust law in a lawsuit filed by the listings giant have filed a motion to dismiss the suit, arguing that Zillow has failed to prove their claim of monopoly activity and that the company is using antitrust law to attack a competitor. I guess Arizona Regional MLS, Arm MLS, and MLS Incorporated Metro MLS filed the motion to dismiss on Tuesday in federal court in Arizona, requesting that the complaint be dismissed with prejudice. Okay, Zillow's antitrust charges stem from accusations that Arizona Regional MLS and Metro MLS conspires to restrict access to Zillow's home showing management platform, known as ShowingTime, in their markets in favor of the showing platform Aligned Showings, which was launched last year by MLS Aligned, a consortium of the multiple listing service. So this is interesting. So we know showing. So for everybody out there that don't know what ShowingTime is, Zillow bought this company called ShowingTime, right?
N21.
Yep. And basically what that is it's a scheduling app that allows, agents to schedule home showings with each other, and it gets, sent to a home seller and they can approve or disapprove, that's pretty much what it is.
That's it.
So I guess Arizona MLS came up with their own, was it Arizona MLS? Yeah.
Yeah.
Came up with their own version of ShowingTime.
Mm-hmm.
And Zillow's mad about it? What?
Yeah. I mean, they can't necessarily say that they're restricting access to it, because as long as Zillow has access to the MLS to put the MLS listings on its website, ShowingTime is already embedded into Zillow's website.
Yeah.
That's kind of what that is down there when it says request a tour at this day, this time. In the event that it's a for sale by owner and somebody clicks that button, it's going to go through ShowingTime and it's going to go to the for sale by owner person, right? So it's a mute point for them to argue it and say that they're restricting access, because, no, you have it on your website. You have it on your Zillow's website. ShowingTime's embedded into it. But what they want is they want the agents to have access to it so that way that they can buy a subscription.
What?
ShowingTime's not free. There's a service.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember that.
It's a subscription-based service, yes. Yeah. And so Zillow bought ShowingTime because ShowingTime was essentially a monopoly in most markets. There were no competitors. Mm-hmm. So for them to argue that, they're trying to create a monopoly, an antitrust on the showing ability for houses, what about all the agents that don't use ShowingTime?
Yeah, I don't use ShowingTime.
You can't say that there's some type of antitrust going on when the percentage of people who use a ShowingTime service like that is small. Can't say it's a monopoly because most agents elect not to use it whenever they can use it. So it's not a monopoly. Yeah. And this is what they're trying to do. But there are a lot of markets where ShowingTime does have a monopoly in the sense that they're the only service provider that covers that market. So Zillow's got to tread carefully here, because someone could countersue them or someone could sue them and say, no, you have a monopoly, or they can copycat with the intent of then suing them, saying that Zillow's trying to lock them out that market. So
careful what precedents you set.
Exactly. And, there are a lot of different things that, Zillow has on its plate right now.
Yeah.
And I don't think that they should be worried or focusing on this. If you were an exec at Zillow, you should let this one go, because this battle's not worth fighting. You got a lot of other battles to fight, and
you got Homes.com chomping on your fins.
Homes.com coming for you. They're gunning for you. Their sole purpose in life is to overtake
Zillow. They made that publicly
known. Yes.
They made no bounds about it. They said we're coming right at them.
That's one. But two, Zillow's main source of income is under attack in the form of commissions being decoupled.
Yeah.
And if that happens throughout the country, well, Zillow is in big trouble.
You think that stock will crash as soon as that happens?
100% will. Oh, wow. 100%
better will. Offload that Zillow stock, yo.
Yes. And there's a few others since we're on it, right? So we can, I don't know that we got this in here. Next is housing prediction. So look, we could talk about some of the other ones, right? So like even EXP Realty, right?
Yeah.
They
with all that sexual assault lawsuits and stuff that's going on there.
They got all that craziness going on, mm-hmm. but that's kind of like the catalyst just driving the other things that's happened. So in the EXP ended the third quarter 23 up $12 million. And then in the fourth quarter of 23, lost $21.2 million to end the year with a negative $9 million in revenue. On top of that, they have all these allegations of sexual assault, sexual harassment type stuff. And then 2,000 agents left EXP in the fourth quarter of 23. Now, I went to school for leadership, got an MBA in leadership, and all of these things are red flags that there are some, there's some internal turmoil happening inside that company for that level, that
level
of items to happen. And then RE/MAX lost $69 million for the year of 23, posted a net negative $69
million. Not including that lawsuit that they have to pay out that they settled?
No.
Oh, God. Goodbye, RE/MAX.
So, you know, but it kind of, again, it goes back to all of these things is like, listen, if you invest in stocks and you're in the stock market and you're a smaller independent investor, you probably want to stay away from some of the household names that are publicly traded on the stock market. A lot of them are based on a structure. Their business model is based on a structure where the brokerage gets 30% of the commissions from each individual agent. And so that 30% goes to the brokerage and that funds their operations. In an environment where commissions are decoupled and buyers' agents may start getting less money, that's going to tighten the purse straps for them.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. And I can't predict the future, but we can at least try. So let's go ahead and end this segment here.
Well, everybody has an opinion.
Yeah. Next one segment, we're going to talk about predictions. Actually, first, we asked AI. AI's prediction for 2024. So we asked ChatGPT, you know, what are the predictions for the 2024 housing market since we just basically are about to close out the first quarter of 2024. So AI says, some predictions for the 2024 housing market include continued growth in home prices, increased demand for affordable housing options, a rise in remote work influencing where people choose to live, and potential shifts in interest rates impacting mortgage rates. Additionally, there may be a focus on sustainability and energy efficiency in new housing developments, as well as advancements in technology impacting the way homes are bought and sold. It's important to keep an eye on current trends and consult experts for more specific predictions for the 2024 housing market. And, okay, so AI really doesn't really know, but they say consult experts. I think we're kind of sort of experts here. What are your predictions for 2024?
2024 predictions, still got interest rates in the sixes.
Mm-hmm.
Demand will go up. Yeah. We're already seeing it, especially in this, in our market. I just ran through the numbers earlier where we have a negative differential in new houses being listed to houses going pending and or sold. So we're not, the inventory is not growing at all.
No.
And with all of that said, the price of homes will continue to grow at a rate that is hasn't been seen in maybe ever.
You know, despite these interest rates by the Fed to cool off housing demand, I think what it's only thing it's really doing is separating. I think it's just those who can't afford it, you know, with the higher interest rates, it just basically means housing affordability is no longer an option for you.
Yeah.
And And it's still not. So what are they going to do? Just keep raising it to like 9, 10, 11, 12% as long as it doesn't hit that inflationary target until it reaches the inflationary target of 2%? Because we're at what, 2.5% inflationary target?
Yeah.
So what happens when we hit 2% and housing is already still mortgage applications being up, supply being down? And what if that we hit 2% inflationary target? Now what, you're going to drop the interest rates to the fours? What do you think will happen to housing prices then?
Yeah, so at that point, though, the growth will be so high. So how interest rates work, when interest rates are lower, your buying power is up. Yeah. When the interest rates are higher, your buying power is down. Mm-hmm. But there becomes a point whenever it doesn't really matter what the interest rate is, because it's just you're priced out of the market. Mm-hmm. Because home prices have grown at a pace that just makes it out of reach for you. And that is really what's happening. That's what we're going to see. I would say that, you know, probably 25, 26, you know, our conversations in 25, 26 are going to be a heck of a lot more difficult than what it is right now, because there has to be a catalyst that drives the prices back down. And unless something crazy, catastrophic happens, there's no catalyst on the like in the future that we're looking at.
Well, we just said what we just read. 2029 was the expectation of when builders will meet the demand with the supply. So they will build enough homes to meet the demand sometime in 2029. That was the prediction.
No, I think that's a lie. I think what they mean by that is that it will take until 29 for the builders to build seven million more homes.
Oh.
But that doesn't mean that it's going to close the gap.
No, I guess it wouldn't, because who knows if we have population increase that there'll be more of a requirement.
There
for
you
homes.
Go. And then on top of everything else, we've talked about this on the show in the past, where companies like JP Morgan and Chase and a few others, banks are funding builders to build rental properties for them that will solely be used for renting to people. And so with that being said, there's...
Wait, banks are going to do rental building?
Yes.
Dude, that is so, that's a genius.
Yes.
That's a genius. You want to know why? I mean, you already probably thought about this.
Yeah.
Okay, let's say I'm Mr. Bank.
Yep.
And Mr. Bank, I'm going to buy me an apartment building. And I'm going to collect all those rents off all those tenants. And guess what? I'm going to send them a bunch of mail on mortgages to buy houses.
But no,
they're by cannibalizing and make and selling them houses.
I don't think they do.
No?
I think
long-term tenancy,
you get rents in, and it's a hedge against Wall Street, against the stock market.
Yeah.
Because you have rental portfolio over here, you got money over here.
So it's just another income
stream. In the stock
stream.
Market, that's all it is another income stream for the banks. And then, you know, they're buying T-bills and things like that as well.
Yeah.
And then they use all of our money that's in our bank. They give out loans. This is nothing more than another stream of income from them.
Oh, my God. You know what?
But it brings in revenue for them.
You know what? It's like if it was an apartment building of 50 units, that's like getting 50 mortgages without having to write a loan.
There you go.
Like 50 mortgage payments without having to write
there
a single
you go.
Loan.
And the risk is minimized.
Yeah.
Because you don't pay your rent, 30 days, you're evicted. See you later. Put the next person in.
Yep. Don't need to foreclose on anything.
And you just keep rolling through it.
Yep.
But the reason why it's important is because it is going to create competition for builders who are for hire and skilled laborers who are for hire as well.
Yeah.
So if I'm a builder and I'm building houses for, you know, my company, Your Next Home, right? And I have workers that work for me. Well, now that all this money is coming into the new construction sector from JP Morgan Chase and any other bank that wants to participate, now my electricians are like, hey, you're only paying me $18 an hour. I got an offer for $25 from the next guy.
Mm.
And so because I'm a for-profit builder, I got to keep my costs low, right? And my labor cost has to be in check. But the bank, They're building it for a totally different purpose. They're building it to collect rents for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
You know, and so whereas a builder, I'm building something to sell it within the next, you know, 30, 60, 90 days, depending on how fast I can build it. So it's going to, you know, and we talk about jobs again. You know, you're going to have inflation in jobs in the labor, because you're going to have companies and banks that are looking to tap into this income stream mm-hmm. of building rental properties, 50, 60, 100 rental different, you know, units, apartment complexes. And so now laborers, skilled laborers, are going to get paid more money. You're going to have to, if you're a builder, you're going to have to pay them more money, because there's going to be a lot more competition in the marketplace.
Mm.
So if you're out there and you're looking to yourself and you're a young person, you're like, hey, should I go to college or should I get a trade? Get the trade, skip the college.
That's what I think too. College is between Josh and I, we got more degrees than a thermometer.
Yep.
But we don't, how often, I can't think of how often we actually use our degrees. You don't need them as much like you used to. That wasn't the key to success. All that means is not guaranteed success. It's just guaranteed debt.
Yes. Which is also another income stream for the banks.
Yeah, absolutely. For life, because you'll never pay off those loans.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for watching. If you like this video, hit the subscribe button. Give us a like. And let us know your 2024 housing predictions. So far, we're done with the first quarter. How do you see the rest of the year playing out? Let us know in the comment below. With that, thanks for watching. See you soon.